April is National Poetry Month, but where is poetry? Is it in the streets? In the library? In our memories? Is it in popular music? The Academy of American Poets suggests putting poetry in your pocket. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. If you were to carry a poem around and share it on the 26th of April, what poem would it be? Our number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. Alaskans share poetry for National Poetry Month on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
8 hours after you quit smoking, your blood oxygen level returns to normal. In 3 months, your lung function improves up to 30%. And 10 years after you quit, your risk of dying from lung cancer is about half that of a smoker. But right now, you're one cigarette closer to cancer. Every cigarette makes you sick, so quit smoking today. Information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, the Academy, fortunately, has given us all a deadline that's still a month away, so I haven't picked what poem I might carry around in my pocket on that day. But the idea is that you put it in your pocket, and then you run into people in the course of your day, and you pull this poem out, and you share it with that person. Down through the years, poetry has been different things. When you think of a time, let's say the Middle Ages, you had troubadours. And, you know, they could tell the truth in the way that others could not. The people in the church, the people in the state. The troubadours kind of had this poetic license, this little exemption that let them tell the truth. And nobody else could. You'd get your head taken off as a heretic, perhaps. So welcome to Talk of Alaska. It's fun to do this show, and I don't have a poem picked out to meet that deadline yet, but I think I'm going to go to my E.E. Cummings just to honor my youth and the process and the way that I learned poetry and learned to value poetry, because that's what this is really about, is how do we value poetry. And we have a star-studded panel with us today, but we'd like to ask you to dig around and figure out which one you would like to share on the 26th, and why. What's it mean to you? What does poetry mean to you generally? I am going to, at this point, welcome to the show by telephone. Peggy Schumacher joins us from Juneau, and she is the Alaska State Writer. Peggy, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you, Steve.
Peggy, I also have, and I guess I'll introduce her at this point, too, Nicole Stellan O'Donnell, author of Steam Laundry, and I guess you were kind of her editor in getting her published on this.
It was a great pleasure to work with Nicole to get this book out, and it's a terrific book.
Nicole, you join us by telephone from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, Steve. Thanks. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, and Peggy, I understand, and I was just talking about this with Nicole, that you actually have there's a tour going on.
Oh, I'm very excited because the University of Alaska Press has made a commitment to literature. And this year we're bringing out Nicole Stellan O'Donnell's Steam Laundry, also Amber Flora Thomas's book, The Rabbits Could Sing, Joan Cain's The Cormorant Hunter's Wife, and we're also bringing out a book of short stories, a posthumous book of short stories by Marjorie Kowalski Cole. The series will publish fiction, nonfiction, and poetry, and we'll probably do 3 titles a year. So it's very exciting.
But also these people are touring.
Yes, we get to go starting on Easter Sunday. We'll be in Los Angeles, then Seattle, then Ketchikan, Sitka, and Juneau. We've already done events in Anchorage and Fairbanks, so we're getting around.
Well, that's just, I mean, is this pulling crowds? I was excited when we got a slam culture going in Anchorage because it would pull crowds. And
exactly.
Often these are people that didn't know nothing about poetry, but they kind of like this idea of ideas flying around.
Exactly. Well, it varies, of course, from place to place. And we're happy if the people who are most excited about writing come out and see it. In Fairbanks, we had standing room only. So it'll vary from place to place.
Peggy, I want to thank you for joining us. I know you have to do some judging. Can you stick with us for a while?
I'd be glad to do that, yes.
All right, that's great. What is the judging you're going to be doing again?
This is the state finals for the Poetry Out Loud competition, which has high school students learning to recite poems, and Nicole Stellan O'Donnell's student won last year. I wasn't a judge last year. You need to know this. There was no conflict of interest, but Nicole's student won last year.
Well, there was a was this tied in with the thing that Kima Hamilton is was doing? They had the Brave Voices at the TEDx in Anchorage on Saturday. Some really interesting Brave Voices taking the stage.
Do you know if it's the same thing?
No, it's a separate program. The Poetry Out Loud program is it's a national program, and Brave New Voices is too. That focuses on slam, and students read their own work.
Right.
In Poetry Out Loud, the Poetry Foundation and the National Endowment for the Arts fund it, and they are reciting the work of established more traditional poets, and they get a huge list of poems to choose from, and they memorize those poems and recite them. So the focus is recitation rather than their own writing and performance.
Yeah, in my business, we call that delivery.
Yeah, it
you
is.
Got it.
That's exactly what it is, Steve, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Nicole. When you read, mm-hmm. how do you do it? I mean, there seems to be like, I sort of came up through the years when Dylan Thomas was all the rage. And we just love that sort of bombastic, with long pauses, highly dramatic sort of, rear back and hurl it at them type of delivery. How do you handle this? Nowadays, it seems that poets often try and make sure that you get every single word, and they like slow it down, put a lot of pauses in there to indicate where the scans are.
I think it depends on your audience. Peggy and I were actually talking about this the other day, and I really believe it's a sin to waste an audience's time. And so you need to read your audience. If you're performing in a slam, you're going to have a different style than if you're in a solo reading. But definitely either way, you need to convey the meaning of the poem. I don't think that poets need to stop at the line break, certainly, but to let that poem gleam and let the audience feel the poem. And I think there's a variety of ways to do it, but you definitely let what your audience is determine how you're going to do it a little bit.
No, it's interesting when I'm announcing, I feel that I need to have the picture in my head of what it is that I'm conveying while I'm announcing. Do you follow the same deal?
Yeah, definitely. I need to inhabit the poem is how I feel it. I need to really let every word be a part of me and be a part of it. So letting those words be a little bit like candy and letting the performance convey the meaning to the listeners is what's really important.
Well, now this book
lives in a different way when it's in the air, and a poem actually for me comes alive when a voice speaks it and somebody else takes it in.
Yeah, Peggy, I think that's definitely that's it. We're speaking then with Nicole Stellan O'Donnell, who is the author and poet of Steam Laundry, and Peggy Schumacher, the Alaska State writer. They're both by telephone. And before I go to our third guest here, I'm holding this up for the camera here, Nicole, in this book, and just to give the listener some idea of what this book is. I mean, essentially, I don't know of anybody that's done this before. You know, as a gun and digging around in the archives to find some letters and stuff from the Gold Rush, and making poems out of them.
Well, what I did is, with the support of the Rasmussen Foundation grant, for which I'm extremely grateful, I was able to get into the archives and read about 600 letters written to and from Sarah Ellen Gibson. And from that, I created the poems that are in Steam Laundry. So it's really kind of a nonfiction novel, or a nonfiction novel in poems. And so it tells this whole overarching story through poetry using all these historical people and documents. And it was a lot of fun to write because it kept me writing, having the next thing I needed to write about. And so it was really a nice process for me.
It's so interesting when you read these old letters and you realize that we just couldn't write like that anymore.
No, they did. They wrote a lot, and they had to communicate in writing. And what was amazing about the letters is they'd be sent off, and you wouldn't know if you'd be getting a response ever or until months later, because you'd hand it to someone getting on a steamboat and hope it made it to the right person in Dawson at that point. So it was really interesting.
Well, I hear the voice. I hear her voice, of course, and then her view of other people. And then there's mm-hmm. there's two sons and there's a husband. And it's your basic gold rush story, right? I mean, coming up with the gold rush and not finding the gold and ending up in Fairbanks.
Well, and one thing I found that interests me in her is that she wasn't a success. We hear a lot about the people who came up and left with the pockets full of gold, but the people who had the more typical experience of coming up and not succeeding, their stories get lost because their letters don't get saved, and her particular letters didn't get saved. I have I don't know if you want me to read a poem from it, but I could read one that kind of talks about the process and how that worked on me a little bit.
Blast off.
All right. This is a poem called Rivertown, and one thing I realized about Fairbanks' history as I researched was that these people are still here, and they're all our street names here in Fairbanks, all the people in these letters, and I hadn't known who they were before I was researching. The title comes from an idea that I've heard Fairbanks described as a dirty little river town, and so I took the river town part, but this is a poem. Rivertown. The men who became street names meet in a saloon in the afterlife. They raise glasses. Whiskey spills over the lip and onto their dirty fingers. They smile and nod, bob their heads in the only agreement they've ever all shared. It's a pleasure to see the roads they cut through stands of willow paved. Whether they're in heaven, surrounded by dance hall girls, straps falling over shoulders, or they're in hell, sweating in starched paper collars, bones aching with regret, they're still with us, perched on poles, peeking out between the loops and columns of the letters of their names. The two brother-in-laws who intersect at the library and the Korean restaurant watch a man jaywalk, wondering if he ever sold out a partner or brought a bank to ruins. The bank president looks down from his corner onto run-down apartments. On Saturday night, cruiser lights reflect off him as men in handcuffs shuffle through the winter's first snow. The rent collector snakes from first to third, disappearing before fifth. On that street, everyone locks their doors. When a boy jumps his bike over a curb and looks up, he thinks he hears faint applause. And the woman, signaling left on Isabel, feels an inescapable longing as the tick of the turn signal counts out her heartbeats, as if she had to sneak out of town in the middle of winter in a sled, hands clasped in a wolf fur muff. All of them wish they could climb down, muddy their feet on the riverbank, but the afterlife, if anything, is green and reflective and perfectly still. Unlike the river, which so long after they bottomed out is still going in the same brown direction.
Brown direction. Peggy Schumacher, maybe I could bring you in as a state writer to talk a little bit about what strikes you about this wonderful poem of Nicole's.
I think that it's very closely observed. If you look at the way that the river moves and the way that water functions, she could witness that. But there's a whole lot that is not observed. There's a lot that makes leaps that involve her imagination, and that's what I like so much about these poems. One of the things that I like very much about these poems is that she looks carefully, she embodies the poems completely, and yet her imagination takes us places that nobody could teach her. I mean, that's Nicole's contribution. She took the letters and transformed them into a new thing.
You know, there is this thing, I don't even know what you call it, but I think there's a name for this figure of speech where you actually say something that's impossible. Is it metonymy, maybe?
I don't know what it is when it's impossible. Do you know, Nicole?
I don't know. I'm thinking, exaggerate it.
You take it completely over the top. So now you got the Chinaman, sitting on the street sign, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that. I love that about that poem. Because
thank you.
We see these people. We feel them. We almost smell them.
Well, and the idea from the poem actually came from a friend of mine who there was a huge drug bust across the street from her house. And I knew that her street was named after one of the very prominent bankers of our town and thought of him, you know, what would Bonifield think of that? that's what's going on right in front of him. And so that's where the poem came from, when she called me and said, you won't believe what just happened.
Oh, that's great. So we're talking about poems, and we're inviting the listeners to share some poems with us. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. And I think it's important to, we don't necessarily have to, like, do a poem and then talk about it. I don't think that's really necessary. It sits on its own, really. I mean, it sits there and does what it does in your head. The thing is, we're putting it through the air, and we're putting it out on the radio. It's going up on the satellite and out across the state of Alaska. It's just pretty a special experience. And I want to go down to Ketchikan in a second, but not before introducing Aku Matu. Allison Worden, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm really excited to have you. You have a little bit of an advantage because you're actually on the regular microphone instead of the telephone. So, yeah, move that in closer to you.
Okay.
And tell me tell me a little bit about yourself, because I have seen you rapping.
Yes.
And I've seen you doing performance art.
Yes.
And I think they're kind of, I don't know as you draw a distinction.
I do. I mean, when I approach a work, I definitely, but sometimes I use rap in my performance art pieces to emphasize some points. I rap and I create performance art pieces, and I am working on a play. So I have a one woman show. So, and I do a little bit of stand up comedy, which is new, but totally challenging. But for me, the rapping, I'm working on a show right now that incorporates the rapping with dance and is an encompassing performance art piece. So it's bringing everything to the floor and just encompassing everybody with the whole experience, a more full experience using the rap.
You've been at this for how long now, Allison?
I've been with theater for over 20 years, yeah. And then the rapping pretty strongly for 5 years now.
And that, for people that don't know, you had this really interesting collaboration with Jack Dalton.
Yes, Time Immemorial. Co-wrote a play that was incredibly powerful and healing, and we were able to tour the state, and it was a really cool experience.
So listeners want to call up and do a shout-out to Allison. It's totally okay. 1-800-478-8255. Local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. Allison, hopefully we're going to be able to play your MP3 and get you to do a little number for us.
Great.
I hope. Let's go to Rebecca, joins the program from Ketchikan, if we have a line open. Good. Rebecca, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you very much. Very much an honor to be here talking with you. And it's a beautiful day here in Ketchikan.
Turn your radio down back there. Otherwise, it's going to confuse us all. We're going to all go crazy.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks. You can just, if you have to walk across the room, just go ahead and do that. We got to have it. Otherwise, we get
sure.
Schizophrenic. Okay, that's much better, Rebecca. So did you dig a poem out? Do you have one figured out that you want to carry around? Great.
I would like to, I do have one I'd like to read. My husband and I are both on the board of directors at KRBD here in Ketchikan, and are very much supporters of public radio.
And of course, that is the birthplace of A Poem a Day Won't Hurt You, right?
It is exactly right.
Phoebe Newman, we've had her on here.
The one that I'm going to put on the air yesterday, but I have another poem that I wrote as a when I presented my husband with this lovely Japanese maple some time ago, and I've never read it, and I'd like to read that today, and I'm calling it The Gift of the Japanese Maple. This tree for thee I give in love. May its humble bough give thou thought for pause. to reflect on life and its eloquent simplicity. May our love continue to grow slowly and with fervor as the branches of this tree which symbolize my love for thee. Though the north wind shall blow from off the sea, these henned leaves will withstand the breeze. Let us stand tall, even stooped as we now are, and hold fast our hands till we're called to the stars.
Man, that is deeply felt. I really appreciate that.
Thank you very much. And I really appreciate this, and I appreciate you having this program on poetry. It's so important to many, many people in this world.
You can say things with poetry you can't say any other way. I think that's kind of the whole idea.
Yes, sir, that's true.
All right, Rebecca.
Thank you very much.
Rebecca from Ketchikan, thank you so much. See, they have a head start. This is when we do the holiday greeting show, it's the Barrow gets a head start because they do it all the time. And they just line up and pass the telephone and pass on all their shout-outs and everything. They easily can monopolize the whole thing. Same thing with the poetry in Ketchikan. Here's another one. Rob joins the program from Ketchikan. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Rob.
Oh, thank you very much. Rebecca lives just north of Whipple Creek, and I live just south of Whipple Creek, so we aren't exactly passing the telephone to one another, but we do share the neighborhood.
Well, do go ahead. I understand you got a poem.
Well, that's right. I was inspired when my daughter was pregnant with her first child here a year or so ago, and also inspired by the Rick Warren presidential questions during that last presidential campaign. Anyway, this poem is entitled Little Wee One. I am a little wee one down deep inside within. I am the answer to the question, when does human life begin? The moment of conception, when two lives did twine, I began my life down here. It's really quite divine. I feel so warm, protected, held close by your embrace. I can hardly wait 9 months to see you face to face. When you and Daddy did the deed, I sprang to life with lightning speed. Two cells united became one. My little human life begun. Take care of me, dear Mommy, now. I'm more than just a fetus. Please don't let immoral law and government defeat us. I feel no pain within your womb, a place of sanctuary. But if Planned Parenthood finds me here, things really might get scary. I'm more than just a little blob to seek and to destroy. I'm actually your little girl, maybe your little boy.
Oh, you just want to stir up trouble, don't you?
Well, it's probably, raising some issues that are kind of on the front burner, or at least on one of the burners, so... Yeah, I think it's fairly poignant, but that's, I guess, part of the duty of poetry and poets.
Absolutely. And to take this point of view that you wrote into the piece. Thank you very much, Rob.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a great day.
Yeah, thank you. It's Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about poetry and asking Alaskans to share their poems. They're coming from Ketchikan, for Pete's sake. Yeah, Peggy, go ahead.
Steve, I was just going to say, when I visited Ketchikan as the Alaskasiate writer, I was very pleased to discover that the mayor of Ketchikan not only writes poetry but has a poetry radio show, and the NPR person who does the morning show, and I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, he has an MFA in poetry from University of Virginia. I mean, there are writers all over Ketchikan. I just want to mention that when we are in Ketchikan touring, Nicole and I and Amber Flora Thomas, the point is going to stay open a little bit later so there can be a meet and greet. And anybody in the community, any writers who want to come out to the point and have a bowl of soup with us, that's happening at 5 o'clock. And then at 6:30, there will be a reading at the Ketchikan Public Library. And that happens April 10th. So 5 o'clock at the point, 6:30 at the library on April 10th. And if people don't, if you would like to see the whole schedule, they can go to my website, which is just www.peggyshoemaker.com.
You know, Peggy, ever since Sheila Nickerson, I think I've known every single state writer, state laureate, they used to call them. And they all take it as an honor and a responsibility, and they have tended to enjoy it, and it seems to me you are really digging in here.
Well, it's very exciting to know that there are people writing all over this state.
Yeah.
All
right, I'm going to, one observation here, Nicole, maybe you want to weigh in on this one. I sense that, you know, for certainly in the late 20th century, we got to a point where the poems didn't rhyme anymore. And it seems to me like rhyming is starting to come back.
Oh, gosh. You know, that's a good question. I think that there was a move into free verse. I know that there's a lot of new formalism or formalism going on, people writing in different forms, received forms. But I think it's just still more open. But yeah, I think we see it everywhere. And we see a lot of poets playing with rhyme in different ways than just choosing a traditional form. So yeah, I think it's pretty exciting. And that's part of it. That's part of the music. If you're, what your responsibility as a poet is to create some music. And if you're writing a free verse poem, you still have to have the music in there. And rhyming's one way to do it, as an, you know, fun way to do it.
Yeah, it's kind of in the form. And Peggy, I guess you could weigh in on this maybe too. It's like you would not think, for instance, that you would think that the form of a haiku, let's say, is so restrictive that it's very hard to get something said, but actually the exact opposite happens. By constraining it so much, you have to kind of distill and think a lot about it in order to get it to fit the form, and often it becomes very more evocative that way.
Absolutely, and compression, as you say, with the haiku, when you have to have everything at its essence, that creates great energy in the language and in the images. For other forms, Robert Pinsky has famously said that all poetry is a combination of repetition and surprise. So whether that repetition is a rhyme or another kind of echo, we can't have too much of it because then we'll go to sleep. But if we have just the right combination, then we stay with the poem and we get what we have. It appeals to all of us, every bit of us, to our emotions, to our mind, to our body, to our deepest spiritual life, all of us.
Well, I might have known I got a whole bunch of poems that are coming in by email, so I'm supposed to read them. I don't know that. I'm not sure about that, but I do appreciate that.
I'll read them.
Thank you, Allison. But I want you to do your material now.
Oh, okay. I was thinking while you were talking about rhyming, as that rapping is a form of poetry, and I definitely rhyme. But there's some parts where I'm not. You know, I break from rhyming and I go into something else.
Yeah.
So
can we, did we get the music to where it would play? All right. Is it all set so it'll start and you can start? Do
okay.
I have to, which one do you want?
Oh, I'm not sure. How many will I get to do? Is this my
do
own?
One now.
Just only one.
Do one now.
Okay.
Then we'll take a break.
Okay. The hot cold sound.
I'm a polar bear coming straight toward you. Living in the city now, what do I do? I'm hanging with Steve Hummel, my friend. We're a couple polar bears, and to the end we will go. And as we walk through the city streets, we will talk in our polar bear kind of way. Talking about the ice, the snow, it went away. Why do we have to swim so far? Why did we have to go, and where will we go? Stars shine down on us, do you see? But what will happen to our polar bear kiddies? Yung-a-na, yung-i-ning-a-na-na-na, yung-a-ning-a-na-na, yung-a-ning-a-na-na. Yung-a-ning-a-na-na, yung-a-na-na, hey. What about us today? I came to tutor the city, to Inbati, a Inupiaq Eskimo Sea. Cause the polar bear won't get a word if we're in the Arctic North. Now you heard that we're right, living up among you. Now what are you gonna do? You see me and you feel the fear. You look in my eyes and you feel the chill right here. Don't worry, I'm not gonna eat you. I'm a polar bear who just came to greet you and say, hey, what about us? What about me and my family? In the Arctic North is where we roam. Long, 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 long ago we know. And we used to to know. Now we're so lost, so now where do we go? Go back within you, deep within you. As you're healing now, what you gonna do? Can you feel the unraveling of time? No, it's time to wake up, and now you can rhyme. Yung a hit, yung a hut, ning a hoy, yung a hut, yung a hoy, yung a hoy.
Well, you just swept up the floor with that one. Thanks, Alison.
Just an excerpt.
and it's Akumatu. Do I have
yes,
that right?
Yes, yes. That's my rap name.
So is that, what is that?
I mean, it's just, well, right, that was freestyle, so.
Right. But the name Akumatu, is that something?
Oh, my name.
Yeah.
Oh, Akumatu is, you know, when you're born as an Inupiaq person, you're given names as a baby, usually after ancestors or relatives that have passed on. And so Akuchuk is one of my great-grandfather. I was named after him through the wishes of my great-grandmother. And then Matumiak is my great uncle, who I was named after. He was a songwriter. And then I have two other names also. So Akuchuk and Matumiak are two of my Inupiaq names. So I hyphenated them. So it's Aku from the Akuchuk part and Matu from the Matumiak part. And I put a little hyphen in there. Because every rapper needs a rap name.
The Barrow people are here. Barrow to Ketchikan today. Talk of Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state governments since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com, and by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
National Poetry Month is giving us an excuse to talk about poetry again on the radio. And this is something that I view as a real treat, because I really think that the kind of attention that a person gives when they listen to the radio lends itself very well to poetry. And in doing experimental radio all the way back into the 70s, I've always found a lot of power in putting poetry and radio together. So it's great to do it statewide and cross-culturally and all that. And one of the things that we're doing today is talking about the poems that people might want to carry around in their pockets for National Poetry Month. On the 26th of April, the Academy of American Poets is encouraging people to just take a poem, put it in your pocket, carry it around, and share it with people that you meet that day on the 26th of April. So you got some time to plan it. And Bill Adam Bauer in Homer says, "Hi, Steve. I'm going to carry excerpts of Carl Sandburg's The People, Yes, in my pocket on April 26th. Now, when's the last time you heard the name Carl Sandburg? Peggy, when's the last time you thought about Carl Sandburg?
Well, actually, I was just in Chicago and got to see the Poetry Foundation's new building. And Carl Sandburg is very present in Chicago, as you might imagine.
Boy, I guess so. And I think maybe there's a little resurgence, because I've seen references to him. And it seemed to me he was totally forgotten for about 40 years there.
I think you're right. I think that people thought that he was old-fashioned or too quiet, and there is so much richness there. I'm glad people have gone back to him.
Yeah, so Adam goes on to say, we read this as a tribute to our parents at our wedding 30 years ago, The People, Yes. Why did the children put beans in their ears when the one thing we told them not to do was put beans in their ears? Why did the children pour molasses on the cat when the one thing we told them not to do was pour molasses on the cat? Adam got me to read one. Let's go to Phil now, joins the program for Wasilla. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Phil.
Thanks very much, Steve. I'm really loving the contributions your guests are providing. I've written over 60 lyrics, and 13 of them have been by poems, made of poems by Alaska poets. 10 by Tim Smith from his books Wild Critters and More Wild Critters. And then one by Sheila Nickerson called The Polar Bear, a poem I commissioned from Anne Chandonnet called Shadows. It was an epic poem about the Exxon Valdez. And then one from Linda McCarriston on the subject of a woman named Rachel Corey called God, the Synecdoche in His Holy Land. And my experiences with the poets, I've said, at least with the Alaska ones, has been universally positive. And one thing that composers do when they set a poem as lyrics, they tend to repeat some of the lines that have some importance either as a musical element, as a rhythmic element, or as a textual element. I was wondering if either of you guys have had experiences with this where they are either learn. I've actually had a couple poets say they learn more about their own poem from having been set to music, and I wonder if they've had similar experiences.
Well, I think that definitely is the case with Allison, so I'm going to pass on her as she gets ready for another rap presentation. Nice. And go to Nicole. You're just starting out, Nicole, as but you've been slamming and so forth for a while. Do you find what Phil says, does that ring true to you, that sometimes you suddenly realize something your poem meant right in the middle of reading it?
Well, for me, it's after a little bit. I haven't actually had anything set to music, which I think is an amazing collaboration between musicians and poets. But for me, the moment of insight comes sometimes after I have a reader hear the poem or read the poem on the page, and they come to me and say, this is what I got from it, or this insight is what stood out to me. And that's the moment that I get it from, when the reader tells me what they saw, and maybe it's something I hadn't even noticed. And I always like those moments to hear back from my readers or my listeners.
Well, you know, we do a journalistic experiment sometime where you give a person a scenario of information and then you ask them to write the lead for the news story that would come out of that. And it's amazing. Uh-huh. You have a room full of 30 people and each of them come up with a different lead.
Yeah, they'd explain things differently. And
right.
Yeah, and in different kinds of readings, you get different responses. You know, after a reading in Fairbanks, someone came up, or not in Fairbanks, but talking about steam laundry, someone came up and said, I know the cabin that's in that photograph in your book. I was in it as a child, and we weren't talking about the place. And once, many years ago, when I did the Poetry Slams at the Fly By Night Club, a gentleman came up and insisted on giving me $20 to support my art. So you get different kind of responses from in different kind of places. And he was very insistent that I take it to the point of setting it in my drink and walking away. So I'm still grateful to him.
Yeah, could I speak to Phil for a moment?
Absolutely.
I just wanted to tell you about music. I once worked with an improv percussion group, and there were three voices. And one would take a line from a poem and begin to riff on it, and, of course, the musicians were playing all around us. And we were playing non-traditional instruments like garbage can lids and the heels of shoes and, you know, shaking seed pods and things. But no rehearsal and no performance was ever the same, because we would riff off of what the other people were doing. And the language, it wasn't the poem on the page at all. It wasn't the music that was written at all, because people were making it up on the spot. And it was very, very energizing.
Phil.
Am I still on?
You are.
Yeah, that sounds super. I love that idea.
Great. I don't know if people would turn out for it or not, but you know, just like any, like haiku is confining, rhyme is confining, and so forth. I think the slam format is definitely very confining. Wouldn't you agree, Nicole?
Yeah, I think it, I think it's another kind of received form. That's how
you know, because you have to please the crowd's going to judge the poem. And you have to please the crowd. So people tend to repeatedly go to certain places and dig around in certain ways.
I think the thing that's interesting about form is it can push you. So if you're writing a poem for a performance piece, or you're writing a poem on the page in a certain form, just today I had a student writing a sestina, which is an obsessively repetitive form. You have to repeat these six words in a specific order. And he was so excited because he found it was actually easy to write because the form pushed him, you know, to the next connection. And so I think the different forms we write in, whether it's slam or whether it's a receive form, can push us to generate more writing and generate those connections that we might otherwise miss as writers.
So, Phil, do you think we're ever going to get to hear the Rachel Corrie cantata?
In Alaska, not until it's been done in Tel Aviv.
Well,
I'm going to be carrying a poem around on Poetry Day, and it's by Jim Jones, and it's called One Stuck Dove. You want to hear it? It's really short.
You bet.
Dipper Duck ran out of luck and got his head stuck in the muck. And when I said it as a song, I added one word, yuck, at the end. And Tim loved it. He says, I hadn't thought of that.
Yuck. Yuck works. Thanks, Phil.
I got to go back to work. Bye.
Bye-bye. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about poetry, you know. A poem a day won't hurt you. 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. Nicole Stellan O'Donnell, author of Steam Laundry, is with us, along with the state writer, Peggy Schumacher. And, Nicole, I want to go back to this because it's a little bit of an obsessive theme with me on Talk of Alaska is when do we really start getting in Alaska literature? And I think that this book of yours sort of breaks some new ground in that regard.
Oh, thank you.
In that you have, this is definitely Alaskan in flavor, let me put it that way. I mean, I'm not bad-mouthing John Haynes here, don't get me wrong. but you know, I love John Haynes, and I think John Haynes is revered throughout the world now. But what you've done here with the... I don't know. I mean, this stuff just smells like yellowed newspaper clippings or something. You know, it's a very, very vivid in terms of the turns of phrase from the period. It's just pretty remarkable. I mean,
Thank you.
And I would have to say also audacious.
Well, thanks. That's a nice combination, remarkable and audacious. The process for me was intense, and it I did it to push myself. You know, and I feel like by combining that historical material and my own perspective and this fictionalized true story, it in a way it was very constraining, but in that same way we talk about form, it freed me as a poet to make a lot of connections that I needed to make and pushed me to write. So,
well,
yeah, and I'm honored that you would, you know, discuss me and John Haynes together. So thank you for that, Steve. I'm really honored.
You know, you have notes in the back of the book,
mm-hmm.
But not for, like, the poem. My favorite poem is Raven in here, which goes, I don't know, two pages, and there's no note on that.
Yeah, that one's totally my construction. The notes all represent where I took historical material or borrowed lines or images. If you'd like me to read Raven, I'd be happy to.
Well, I want to save it for a little bit because
I want to give
Allison another shot there.
Sure,
we may
definitely
not get to it, but I'm going to recommend it to the listeners because I really think that it taps in. I mean, there's no Alaskan who doesn't have some kind of special feeling about Raven, and you get some of that in here.
Well, and for that poem, I definitely was imagining my character,
right,
that I was writing about. But, of course, I read her letters, and mainly letters to her, because her letters were sent off, so they would have been in other,
right,
places and not been preserved. And I took my own experience of what it's like to drag myself out to the woodpile in the winter and put it in her voice. Because that, you know, she lived at the same latitude with the same light and the same cold, and so I was able to plug a lot of myself in, and that surprised me in the process how many of the poems are my own life converted in some way.
I think that's
repurposed.
That's that compression thing again.
Yeah.
Going on, I mean, it's just amazing how much is really contained there when you start opening it up. Allison, are you ready?
I think I am.
Have we,
I'm going to stand up for this one.
Okay, which cut are we using?
L.A.
L.A. She decided to use L.A. Are you You probably don't have to use this, the fly swatter there.
Okay.
Yeah, you'd probably be okay without it. Just don't get too close to the mic because it's not one of these wrap mics. You got to stay a distance on this. Yeah, and let me just take a second.
Great, thanks, Steve.
There you go.
Oh, cool. Oh, there's a sensing cool. Element. Hello, okay. Everyone out there in Radio Land. Oh, not too close. Yeah. Okay.
Right, but you can hear it. You can hear it in your earphones. You know what you're doing.
I also write regular poetry, and yeah. I just want to mention that April 16th, Palmer Arts Council is bringing out myself and Kima Hamilton and Leah Frankson and Brian Hutton and, I'm forgetting his name. We're all, Trey, we're all going to work with youth around slam poetry and poetry, helping them to, we give workshops and then in the evening they have a performance, which is a lot of fun. We did it last year. And it's really fulfilling to work, listen to the youth's voices. And Peggy Shoemaker was there last year. So it's everything's connected.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
You bet. And I found that if you can get out with the slams and so forth, this is very well received.
Yeah.
And when you get the people actually creating as well, that's pretty special.
Yeah, it's fun to get the youth excited about poetry through rap. So I teach youth rapping, and through that we write a collective poem.
What do you think, Allison? Do you want to do it first and then take the break, or take the break and then do it?
It's up to you.
I think we would take the break
okay.
first. Okay. All right, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
A reminder from the Alaska Energy Authority. The 2012 Commercial Energy Audit Program application period ends Wednesday, March 28th at 4:30 p.m. Owners of eligible commercial buildings throughout Alaska, including nonprofits, may be reimbursed for a qualifying energy audit. Go to akenergyauthority.org to apply online. Energy efficiency is good for business. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
Multidimensionality, here we go. In your back, Eskimo. Hakubatu, Kanavika, Kanyuk, Likli, no. Kanyuk, 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 CVC, hi. Habira, Nakuruma, Kanyuk, Kukubiak, Kuknak, Dumaha. A long, long, long time ago, living on the land, yes, yes, we always know. Connectivity to the earth, to the land, to the air, to the sea. Now bring us to right here, a multidimensional being with long hair. Here we go. Now how we gonna navigate in the urban environment? Now I feel great, cause I remember in my dreams, my ancestor come to me in teams. They give me pep talks and they say, this is how we did it long time ago in this way. Now we're 2-1-2, this is how you do. This is how you integrate the knowledge that we give you. Can you feel the strength of our ancestors all around us? Yes, 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 they're bringing us to the next level in 2-1-2. Here we go, now what you going to do? It's a choice every single day. Embodying, allowing, yes, we flow this way. Hey, I'm not threatening you, just allow me to be the culturally you. Here we go, this is what I say. Long ago, do you know, hey? Did you see? In long time ago in a dream. Oh, now my granddaughter said, this is how it goes, this is how we do it today. She taught me how to use an iPhone, and every day I choose to give back to my youth. I choose to live the values that were taught to me, the values, yeah, now that clearly see. Up we are today. Can you feel the power and the love? The ancestors embracing us from above.
Allison Akuchuk?
Akuchuk.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. What's that one called?
That's a multidimensionality.
Well, you gave the 360 North viewers more excitement than they've had ever since the show's been on.
That's great.
It's Talk of Alaska. It's coming up on National Poetry Month, and we'll go to Mary, joins the program from Glen Allen. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Mary.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. I want to say hi to Peggy Shoemaker, who's a friend of mine and somebody who taught me that poems should be everyday use.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. This is just a small poem about axes. It's pretty clear how it's turned out that I have spent my life with axes. In the morning, I like to chop wood, even on the dim, cold days. That is not an affectation now, though perhaps it once was. I'm very suspicious of myself and sometimes unforgiving like an axe. Once chosen, our bite pushes away the other places we may have entered the day. My favorite is from Swedish Mike. It's a gift that makes me happy as I use it. Perhaps it's a woman's axe, but it's not a boy's axe because that is a very specific name for something else. This one is for kitchen wood and kindling. Light in the hand and narrow where it jumps into the wood. Its dowdy little hips do all the work.
Oh, man. That's a little bit John Haynes-y.
Maybe.
Maybe. Thank you. Thank you, Mary from Glen Allen.
Yeah, thanks for this program. It's great.
Yeah, poetry in the radio, I'm telling you, it works. Okay, I got one on the internet I just have to do. And this one is sent by Mary, and it's George Paisley of Ketchikan's poem. Reading about two lovers, each trapped in their life history, wise enough to know it, clever enough to describe it, knowing it as demon, yet foolish enough to love anyway, a moment of sharp clarity came to me. I am not good enough, not agile enough, nor wise enough, nor foolish enough to live the life I dream. But I am steadfast enough to continue pursuit, to engage what is mine to engage, and I am ridiculous enough to laugh at me, with you, about the absurdity of our species, yet somehow somber enough to pray, in the very same breath with which I laugh, and I am grateful anyway. Talk of Alaska, Poetry Month coming up, and we're asking people to call up and share their poetry, and we got a great panel with us as well. Just chime in any place you want, Allison.
Okay.
Let's go now to Peggy here in Soldotna. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Peggy.
Thank you, Steve. I have a poem that my sister, who lives in Ireland now, wrote about being a cannery girl in 1969. And certainly, it's your wonderful rapper is a hard act to follow. I think working on this line is enough of a shared experience that maybe we could enjoy this. I see hoses blasted fish guts down the slime line to us cannery girls who were high-styling it in our brightly colored bandanas, blue jeans able to stand up by themselves, a white oil cloth apron which made us look like birthday candles, and sometimes mascara. Sickening smell of salmon pressurized in torts, beeping forklifts, metronomed machines, canner, litter, boiler, boxer, and foreman who yelled in Japanese. Wild salmon thumped monotonously through the guillotine, while us shameless beauties stuck our fingers into the headless cavities and shook ruby eggs into the slanting tray, tossed guts onto the concrete floor. Finally, the 10:30 whistle, released to the seagull-filled July air. We listened to Bob Dylan's North Country Fair, sipped coffee, ate donuts, and flirted with college guys up from sexy Seattle who talked of Carlos Castaneda. Below the cannery, the mouth of the Kenai River lay curvy and prone, dotted with testosterone-filled boats whose captains waited for a cannery girl who would say yes to Cook Inlet and yes, perhaps, to him.
Oh, man, that brings it all back. I can almost smell the fires outside.
That's right. It's in a small book she wrote called Zephyr.
Oh, beautiful. Thanks so much. And Anne, what's her name?
Whose poem was that?
Mary Mullen, M-U-L-L-E-N.
It's a terrific poem. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. It is Talk of Alaska. We're sharing poetry here. And at this point, Nicole Stellan O'Donnell, maybe you could give us Raven from your book,
yeah,
Steam Laundry.
Yeah, give you Raven. So it's called Raven. I want to ask you what it is like to stand solid against the snow, to swallow the short daylight and preen yourself into night. Wood stove black, feathers, feet, eyes, the curve of your beak, one mind. I move beneath you, weighted by my borrowed skin, wool skirt, gray ruff, blue coat, leggings, thick knit hat. Hauling firewood, I hear your call, wordless, unfrozen, between the trees, then the dry slice of flight above my head as you disappear. I see your belly, your wings, their cloak of certainty, your unified purpose. And I want to ask you how to survive winter along this frozen river. But I only muster the hollow chalk of log on log as I stack the sled. My body, its cobbled mess, gangly, lacking grace, sputters, stops, then goes again. You glow, live coal, living cinder, fleeing each evening to the dark hills of the crooked rookery of spruce, where hundreds of black eyes dream the same smoldering dream.
Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
There's something about, how contained a raven is and how you almost, a human being is all dressed up in all sorts of extra skins and fabrics and so forth. And they just look at that raven out there perfectly at home in the wintertime.
Well, and I think they must look at us and find us a little amusing.
I don't think there's any doubt of that at all. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking poetry. And Kirsten Christensen in Sitka chimes in and says, just a note to let you know that Alaska poetry is alive and well. Angie Slinghuff and I co-edit the quarterly journal Alaska Women Speak, a wonderful source of women's words in both poetry and prose.
And we should also mention that Alaska Quarterly Review is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. So that's been 30 years of really fine literature from Alaska, reaching an international audience, and then bringing literature to Alaskans both.
Yeah, that's great.
Steve, could I read the one I'll have in my pocket?
Please.
Okay, this is by Jane Hirschfield, and the poem is called What Binds Us.
All right, no, we only got 40 seconds, so.
Oh, then I don't have time to read the whole thing. So I'll just say, she talks about, she talks about scars and how when there is a scar on a horse, it's called proud flesh. And she said, and when two people have loved each other, see how it is like a scar between their bodies, stronger, darker, and proud, how the black cord makes of them a single fabric that nothing can tear or mend.
Beautiful. Peggy Shoemaker, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Steve.
Nicole Stellan O'Donnell, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Allison Warden, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Akumatu.
Bye-bye.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
Providence Imaging Center, helping your medical provider secure access to imaging results online so they can view your report quickly, whether you were seen in Eagle River, Anchorage, or Soldotna. Learn more at provimaging.com. The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.